Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, December 18th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
Yes, it is. And I just want to share with the listeners, we didn't do a live program yesterday as where we broadcast out of Pennsylvania. The producer, they had no power. So we were unable to do the live program. So we did replay Tuesday's program with Greg Hunter. So I hope you enjoyed that. And today I was working on our schedule for next week. And we're going to be cutting back our hours next week for the holiday, for Christmas. And we will probably do a program on Monday. And then I think we're going to take a break. So that's what it's looking like right now. And, of course, if there's anything that's truly major that needs to be reported on, we will be live. We will come to you live no matter what day it is. And that's always been my rule of thumb. I don't mind taking days off on holidays and things like that. However, if it is warranted and there is news that needs to be shared, tune in because we will be there. So,
sounds like commitment to clients and listeners to me, Melody.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when I'm talking about something big, I mean something big. You know, so far what we've been experiencing in the news, it might be big, but not big enough to...
variations of the same theme.
Very much so.
Ad nauseum.
And I actually, somewhere, I can't remember what I was listening to this morning... They actually began to talk about the debt. And I'm thinking to myself, really? But then again, it benefits the agenda of those that were reporting it. So, you know, I guess it's not too much difference. But let's go ahead and start with the prices today. Gold today tried to recover. We had a high of 1,891. We're currently at 1,881.90. So 1,882, down $5. Silver was down 29 cents. We were as high as 26.17. So we had a decent day for silver. It reversed, and I'm sure the dollar got a little bit stronger. Silver, $25.80. In the New York spot price after market. Platinum was down 12 bucks at 1,040. Palladium was up $54 at 2,400. The USDX today, wow, 0.24 to the upside, just hovering on that 90.02, and it's up 24, so it did break it. So it's going to be an interesting week next week. Because it'll be a lot of light trading going on next week for the next 2 weeks. So, plus there's a lot of other things that we'll be talking about during this program about whether the government is going to close the doors. And they'll probably will and give everybody a holiday. But crude oil was up 55 cents at 48.91. And the paper markets today, the Dow, fell more than 100 points. As, of course, everyone as our so-called lawmakers are trying to seal a last-minute stimulus deal. And the Dow was down 124 points, although it's off the low of the day at 30,179. The S&P was down 13 at 3,709. NASDAQ was down 9 points, 12,755. And they're going to try and keep the Dow at least above 30 through the holidays. I'm sure that's their goal, to make everybody as happy as they can be through this difficult holiday season. 10-year yield, 0.95%. That was up a little bit, 0.02. And all European Asian markets were down overnight, although just minimally. And So, you know, it's again, you know, a lot of it is, we'll be talking about the dollar and so forth. But first, since we didn't have a program yesterday, there was a little more than a week before the programs expire next Saturday. And claims for pandemic unemployment benefits are continuing to spike. About 1 million new people are receiving unemployment assistance via these temporary programs. As of November 28th, there were 14 million people receiving unemployment benefits through the PUAP, Emergency Unemployment Compensation Programs. The Pandemic Unemployment Assistance and the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation. Can't they make them smaller names?
I know. We always tempted to just abbreviate.
I know. But an increase of 958,000 just from the previous week. Altogether, 1.4 million Americans filed unemployment claims for the first time last week, with 935,000 filing for traditional state unemployment benefits and 455,000 filing claims for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. So, you know, they're still at odds in D.C. on a $900 billion package. You know, it's interesting, Dave. It started out at $3 trillion. It was dipped to $1.5 trillion. President Trump had come out and said, I'll sign anything, just get it to my desk. And here we are now. They're still at $900 billion package, but it would extend the jobless programs. So, unlike in previous weeks, when the number of people receiving traditional unemployment benefits actually was declining, and the number of Americans on long-term unemployment programs, like the PEUC, was rising, in the last week of November, the numbers rose across the board, Dave.
Yeah, and the number of people receiving traditional unemployment benefits rose by 552,000. The number receiving PUA increased by 689,000. PEUC rose by 269,000. And the extended benefits program rose by 79,000. In all, the number of Americans receiving unemployment benefits increased by 1.6 million. For the week of November 28th, 20.6 million Americans were receiving some kind of unemployment benefit. These numbers, according to Lindsay Piegza, who's a chief economist at, I don't know if it's Stifel or Stifle, said, the numbers highlight the fragility of the labor market, particularly now as the second resurgence of the virus is leading to further business closures and additional job losses. The Labor Department has said it agrees with a report from the Government Accountability Office, which we've mentioned a couple times in the past, that found its weekly releases do not provide an accurate estimate of the total number of individuals actually claiming unemployment insurance. So the so-called official numbers, Melody, could be lower than those being reported, or more likely, higher. Much higher. We'll talk more about some of these numbers in the third segment of today's program.
Well, you know, the dollar, as I mentioned earlier, the dollar fell sharply yesterday against almost all of the world's major currencies. The dollar index dropped to 89.74, and that is the lowest since April of 2018, before rebounding slightly to the end of the trading day. The dollar rebounded 0.25% today, but it was seen as largely consolidating losses after drumming this week. The index, which measures the dollar against the major currencies, and like the euro, the yen, the British pound, fell 0.7%, its fourth daily decline in a row, and the fifth time in six sessions it closed lower. It's approaching its weakest level since the dollar's in the strengthening cycle that had began back in 2014. The latest blow to the dollar came from the Fed, which vowed not to touch policy even if the outlook for the economy brightens, as everyone is expecting, except us.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations for more government spending are also weighing on the dollar. Of course, other central banks are also using these extraordinary measures. They're just aimed at propping up their economies.
And Melody, while a weaker dollar is viewed by some, not by all, as generally positive for the U.S. and global economies, it's been a source of some angst, we'll call it agita, for some rivals, including the European Central Bank. But an important part of this story centers on interest rates, particularly the differential between yields on bonds in the U.S. and everywhere else, particularly in Europe. While treasuries still yield more than, say, German government debt, that differential has shrunk, reducing the incentive to hold U.S. paper and weakening sometimes significant source of support for the U.S. dollar. Now, we know yesterday gold jumped by 1.7%. It's 1887, its highest in a month. Silver gained 2.4%, following a 3.8% increase on Wednesday, and closed at 25.74, its highest since early November. Dollar index is down nearly 7% year to date and 13% lower since hitting this year's high toward the end of March. Now, on the other side of the currency world, the Chinese yuan has gained significantly against the dollar this year. Yesterday, it moved to 6.5 yuan per dollar, its strongest since June of 2018. The dollar also is trading at or near multi-year lows against other major currencies like the euro, Japanese yen, and the Aussie dollar. And there you go, mate.
Well, I'd like to do a comparison on the dollar and the stock market to see when back in 2008, or even just back into March, what the dollar was doing when the stock market was, kind of falling out of bed.
That sounds like
to see what kicked it to see what kicked it off, because it's interesting, because we still, although we're down in the paper markets today, and maybe that 90 point, I knew that 90 would be an important target, and they're going to fight for it. Well, maybe they will and maybe they won't, because we have a difference in administrations and so forth. So I don't know, it's kind of interesting.
I think our I wonder if that'll be affected to a large extent, at least initially, by any policy changes toward China after January 20th. But I can look into that, and maybe I can, even if I have time to get it done over the weekend, we can feature that in our newsletter on Monday.
That would be real interesting, just to see if there's, I don't know if you could tag any comparisons to it and so forth, because things are so much different today than what they were in 2008, up, until the dollar started strengthening. I was reading an interesting opinion on Janet Yellen coming into the Treasury, and her idea, they're talking about how, and I'm reading more and more about, how, if you think we already have a lot of debt, when you start reading about, where her sympathies lie and so forth. These are administrations, and, the Republicans have done they threw fiscal policy out the window in the last 4 years. And so I can't imagine this next administration being any different. Why? Because that's what the economy needs, just to keep going. And it's not even so much what the economy needs; it's what our structure needs.
Yeah. We actually will talk about Yellen more in the second segment of the program.
But the U.S. current account deficit, which is a measure of the nation's debt compared to other countries, rose 10.6% in the third quarter, large because of an increase in the trade gap on goods. The current account deficit increased to $178 billion. The bigger gap reflected an increase in the deficit in goods. And the U.S. economy improved somewhat, a little bit faster than some of these other countries, and, of course, leading excuse me, to a bigger increase in imports over exports, Dave.
Yeah, and just another story quickly here. Every U.S. state saw their personal income drop in the third quarter as federal stimulus wound down, underscoring the need for fresh aid as Congress moves closer to a deal. Closer but no cigar, for sure. Now, West Virginia led this decline, contracting 30% at an annual rate, with not a whole lot of room to go. West Virginia, one of the states that has the least amount of household personal income, while Michigan, Kentucky, and Oklahoma all registered drops exceeding 20%. By comparison, incomes fell just 1.6% in California, and interestingly, less than 1% in Georgia, where two January 5th runoff elections, of course, will determine control of the U.S. Senate beginning in January. Now, overall, American incomes, Melody, contracted the most since 2013. Wow. In the third quarter, state personal income fell 10% at an annualized rate during that period, marked the sharp contrast from the prior quarter, the second quarter, 36% jump. Though, and that came right after, again, the pandemic unemployment checks of $1,200. Though total income remained higher than a year ago before the pandemic hit.
So, well, you know, Congress is working to avert government shutdown. House leaders said they'll act to prevent it. And but what we can't prevent is our break. We got to go into it one way. So we'll talk about the government shutdown when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's going to be an interesting 2021. Even the last 2 weeks of December could be interesting. So get prepared, buckle up, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 4188. Not sure why I'm losing my voice today. I guess it's the end of the week. Did a lot of talking this week, and it's catching up to me. But let's go ahead and finish up what we were talking about before we head into Janet Yellen. The House leaders are trying to prevent a government shutdown, and it always cracks me up. Well, the way they say this when they're being interviewed, well, you know, we're going to have to work through this weekend.
Yeah, like, I know.
Yeah, it's just, I just want to shake them. It's just like, are you kidding me? Well, you know, we're going to have to work through the weekend. And, you know, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. But we're working hard for the American people. It just makes me want to. But anyway. They might be working this weekend. And there's a renewed dispute over an effort led by Republican Senator Pat Toomey to codify the phase out of the Federal Reserve emergency lending facilities at the end of the year. Continues to be one of the key sticking points on the aid package. Democrats say Toomey's provision would limit the Fed's ability to respond to future crises and is the biggest obstacle to getting a deal done on the relief packages. Some senators may not go along with another temporary funding extension if it's needed. Thune said the chamber's number two GOP leader. That's what he said. So there's all kinds of opinions on what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. And instead, they're not going to get anything done.
Yeah, there's really little leeway, particularly in the Senate, for much dissent, particularly when it comes to either full fiscal year funding and the attachment thereto of a stimulus package. You got guys like Republican Senator Josh Hawley, Missouri, said he won't support a stopgap measure unless that includes direct stimulus payments to individuals. I always have been fascinated since my early college days when I learned the term "politics makes strange bedfellows." Melody, I mean, here you have a guy like Hawley. Who's certainly not what I, and I hate these labels anyway, but I wouldn't call him an ultra conservative by any stretch. But you do have someone who is clearly on the conservative side policy wise, and then he's banding together with the likes of Bernie Sanders in the Senate and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the House to ensure these direct stimulus payments, which they're now talking about $600 bucks, maybe $700. I suppose it'll end up at six, because I think they're trying to get to a $2,400 level for a family of four. But anyway, that's just a quick Now, you do have House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said he's not going to, I mean, he would support a short-term stopgap bill if they can't finalize the stimulus package by today and soon today, because the House still has to have a debate, and then it will go to the Senate, where they have to have their debate under their each House's rules, even if it's just 5 minutes per member. So I agree with you, Melody. I mean, it's likely there will be a short shutdown because funding technically runs out at midnight. Although the essential workers who would normally be working on a Saturday, there's typically funding continued under existing rules anyway. So.
You know, it always amazes me. I mean, when we talk about government shutdown, it really doesn't mean anything anymore. It might have, how many years ago, when the first one's taken place and so forth, it meant something.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything anymore. And, you know, a lot of people out there say, you know what, you know, it's better, they can't ruin this country anymore. Shut it down. You know, and you know, there's all kinds of various opinions and emotions going through. The way I view it is, look at the state of our country that we have gotten to this point. And the real reason they can't fund it is because of all of the debt that we owe. And it's a big part of it. You can call, and they can call it, give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. And it's a true showing of where we are with our politics, with our politicians. In this nation, it's sad. And what's even more sad, people don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so what?
That's the way it's always been done, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so again, and when you have this type of government, it's just a sign of it's just a sign of
fall of the Roman Empire.
Yes. Yeah. So tomorrow, I don't know, but sooner than later. And you know, last week we talked about the zombie zombie businesses, companies. And, you know, you're looking like, you know, some of these companies, Boeing, Carnival, Delta Airlines, Exxon, Macy's, many of the nation's most iconic companies, they can't even earn enough to cover even the interest expenses due on their debt. More than 200 corporations have joined the ranks of so-called zombie firms since the beginning of this year. In fact, zombies now account for nearly a quarter of those firms. They've added almost $1 trillion of debt to their balance sheets in the span, bringing total obligations to almost $2 trillion. That's more, it's about $400 billion more than the roughly $1.5 trillion that zombie companies owed at the peak of the financial crisis earlier this year. The consequences of a possible economic recovery are profound. The Fed's effort to stave off a rash of bankruptcies, purchasing corporate bonds, could very well have been prevented. But in helping hundreds of ailing companies gain virtually unfettered access to credit markets, policymakers may inadvertently be directing the flow of capital to unproductive firms, and that's going to depress employment and growth for what? Years to come. I mean, it just baffles me, Dave, that nobody gets it. Where we are and where we're headed. So.
Well, I like the quote of this one economist at Apollo Global Management, Torsten Slok, who said, "We've come to the point that we should ask, what are the unintended consequences?"
Yeah.
And Slok added, "The Fed decided to step in. Now the question becomes, what about the companies that have been kept alive that otherwise would have gone out of business?" We're back to that again, Melody.
Yeah.
Just as we were 2008, 9, and 10. Now, zombie companies get their nickname because of their tendency to limp along, unable to earn enough to dig out from under their obligations, but still with enough access to credit to roll over their debt. Still, they're a drag on the economy because they keep assets tied up in companies that can't afford to invest and build their businesses. You know, of course, not every company that becomes a zombie is destined to stay one forever. I mean, some companies that have seen earnings wiped out due to the pandemic or the recession that preceded it or could rebound at least somewhat if and when a vaccine allows the global economy to return to sturdier footing. That's when they might need all the debt they've raised. Yet the sheer amount of borrowing undertaken by struggling corporations in recent months will almost certainly limit the capacity of some of them to invest in more capital and adapt to new consumer demands. So it is frustrating. I mean, this $2 trillion they collectively now owe, I mean, compared to the $1 trillion of debt that the zombie firms reported before the pandemic laid waste to balance sheets, it's an eye-opener.
It really is. Well, you know, in the first segment of the program, I mentioned Janet Yellen, and, you know, we all know she's to become the next Secretary of the Treasury. And the article was written by Graham Summers of Phoenix Capital, where he thinks that the big theme for 2021 is going to be inflation. And part of that is the appointment of Janet Yellen. And we know previously that Yellen ran for the San Francisco, that she ran the Fed, San Francisco Fed, before eventually being the Fed chair. So throughout her tenure in these positions, she proved to be someone who, you know, loved using political reasoning and data, as she said, to justify easing monetary conditions. In 2014, soon after taking the helm as Fed chair, she gave a speech in which she stated that the Fed would have done a better job predicting and then navigating the great financial crisis of 2008 if it had maintained more diversity in its workforce. Really? Summer says Biden is effectively giving the purse strings for the Republic to a social justice warrior, someone who believes that social justice issues should guide monetary policy. In plain terms, he warns, all of this means more money printing. If the Treasury decides to take on political projects with the intention of making the economy fair for all that really means is that the Treasury will be funneling more money into the economy. And they are not supposed to do that. That's not their function, Dave.
Yeah, and remember, the Treasury created these credit programs that the Fed bailed out the entire financial system with earlier this year. Was through these so-called credit facilities, I don't like that word, but that the Fed began buying municipal bonds, corporate bond ETFs, and asset-backed securities. Now, as such, the Treasury represents a conduit through which the Fed has been funneling record stimulus into the financial system, up $4 trillion this year in its balance sheets. Previously, the Fed spent $3 trillion between 2008 and 2016, $3 trillion, fighting the Great Recession and its aftermath. The Fed spent that same amount in 7 months in 2020. I was only able to do this legally by using the Treasury as a conduit, although some debate whether the Treasury is needed. And Joe Biden has just picked Janet Yellen to run this organization, a career academic who strongly believes she should use her position to combat political issues. And all of this means more money printing coming to the U.S. And Summers believes strongly, it appears, that this is the big theme for 2021, no matter what else may come. More money printing, more inflation, more explosive moves in inflationary assets. Now, on the positive side, if nothing else, that coupled with historic low interest rates will be good for gold and silver. So go figure.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is really interesting. And there's $33 trillion, $33 trillion tucked away in U.S. retirement assets at the end of the third quarter. It accounts for 34% of all Americans' household financial assets. Now, these numbers were reported this week by the Investment Company Institute. IRAs, individual retirement accounts, now make up more than one-third of all retirement accounts. ICI Senior Director of Retirement Investor Research Sarah Holden said households often indicate that they rolled over assets to consolidate the retirement accumulations as they progress through their careers and into the retirement. And I'll tell you what, Dave, $33 trillion, I mean, that's in lines of the amount of debt that we owe. There's just no way people are going to be walking away with $33 trillion. In their pockets.
Well,
with the government defaulting on theirs.
It's well, like, there you go. That's another situation. I mean, even if they do walk away with that face amount, in terms of purchasing power, it certainly won't be anything close to that, particularly for younger investors. Now, that's not to say stop investing or don't invest. It's just have your eyes wide open.
And get it protected. Get your insurance policy on your wealth with gold and silver. 800-375-4188. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Are you
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, one more time. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody this last segment of the day. Well, she attends to some client business before heading into the weekend. Our latest blog, which is out as we speak, is about urgency. The urgency to act. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page, the @ dgscoins. Now, as the end of this historic, horrendous, and unforgettable year quickly approaches, we look ahead to a new year that, well, for now, brings a little more than uncertainty and some hope. In the meantime, pandemic jobless benefits for more than 12 million jobless Americans expire in 8 days, and a growing number of households are facing simply dreadful financial conditions. Census data released this week highlights the urgency for Congress and the White House to extend those critical benefits and other key CARES Act relief programs, which have helped millions of families literally survive during the last 9 months. The Census Bureau's latest Household Pulse survey paints a grim picture. Listen to some of these. 85.4 million adults, that's 36% of all U.S. adults, say it was somewhat or very difficult to pay for normal household expenses like food, medical bills, rent, and student loans in the last week. That's the highest rate going back to late August, and a 2.9 million increase since the last data release in mid-November. Another 27.4 million adults, 13%, report that they sometimes or often didn't have enough to eat in the last week. And that's 1.6 million more than mid-November and 5 million more than in late August. 14.3 million adult renters, that's 20% of the adult population, report being behind on rent. That's up from 12.4 million in mid-November. What's more, 42 million adults say their household no longer used regular income sources like those received before the pandemic to meet their spending needs in the last week. Of course, that would be your paycheck, monthly pension, what have you. Instead, they tapped their savings, sold assets, borrowed from friends and family. In short, the situation for this group is urgent. 72% report difficulty paying for household expenses. 31% report sometimes or often not having enough to eat. And 30% of renters report not being caught up on rent. Other 36 million adults report that they still have income from before the pandemic began. However, they also have relied on the same coping strategies that I just mentioned to meet their spending needs. Some of these households might have been financially vulnerable even before the pandemic. Others might have lost part of their income because of shutdowns and layoffs. In this group, whatever the cause, 46% report difficulty paying for household expenses. 13% report sometimes or often not having enough to eat. 15% of renters report being behind on rent. Still a lot. On the other side of the not-so-gold coin, among the 115 million adults who've been able to rely on their regular income sources instead of coping strategies, 13% report difficulty paying for household expenses. 3% report sometimes or often not having enough to eat, and 7% of renters report being behind on rent. Renters of color, that is blacks, Latinos, Asians, much more likely to report difficulty affording rent. 29% of black renters, 26% of Latinos, 21% of Asians say they're behind on rent compared to 14% of white owners. Between 7 and 13 million children didn't get enough to eat in the last week because the household just couldn't afford it. Almost 40% of children, 40% living in rental housing, are in households that aren't getting enough to eat or aren't caught up on rent. Ladies and gentlemen, if that's not enough to make your stomach turn or to write a letter to your legislator, I don't know what will. What I do know is this: Santa Claus is going to be busier than ever this year. Be on the lookout for our blog. If you haven't opened it and you're a subscriber, it's waiting for you. Now, recently we talked about how Too Big to Fail Credit Suisse Bank was in hot water following a damaging spying scandal and major losses the bank had incurred in one of Asia's most spectacular accounting frauds. And now today, we've learned that Swiss prosecutors have charged Credit Suisse over alleged failings related to a Bulgarian crime ring accused of laundering cocaine trafficking proceeds. Switzerland's attorney general said that an unnamed former Credit Suisse manager and two alleged members of the criminal organization had been indicted. The AG office said Credit Suisse is accused of failing to take all the organizational measures that were reasonable and required to prevent the laundering of assets belonging to and under the control of the criminal organization. Now, the trafficking occurred several years ago, between 2004 and 2008, and the fall of communism in Bulgaria, when top-level wrestlers, lacking financial support, turned to criminal organizations for help, according to the AG's office. Now, Credit Suisse said it unreservedly rejects the allegations and convinced its ex-employees who were charged were innocent. Credit Suisse takes note with astonishment of this decision to bring charges, it said. Now, Switzerland's second largest bank, I think the first is UBS, said its anti-money laundering measures have since improved, adding that the maximum fine Switzerland's top criminal court could impose was 5 million Swiss francs. That's equivalent to 5.7 million U.S. dollars. The Attorney General's office said that the wrestler involved has since been sentenced to lengthy prison terms in a number of European countries. One of the wrestlers, it said, built up and managed a hierarchical and compartmentalized criminal structure which aimed to make money for its members by trafficking in cocaine. The proceeds were then paid into accounts in Switzerland where the money was laundered through Credit Suisse to buy Swiss and Bulgarian real estate. That's according to the AG. And alleges, of course, that Credit Suisse acted as the bank for these activities, adding that the former bank executive who was indicted oversaw transactions worth more than 140 million Swiss francs for this group. That's equal to about 159 million U.S. dollars. So there you go, another big bank, too big for its and our britches. Now, with the official start of winter just a few days away, many small business owners are concerned that their businesses won't be able to make it to the start of spring. You have restaurants, bars, gyms, coffee shops, and hairdressers, other independent retailers all over the nation. Been absolutely devastated by the first round of lockdowns across the country earlier in the year. And now, a new round of potential lockdowns is dealing death blows, potential death blows to countless businesses that had hoped to find a way to get back on their feet in 2021. According to a new Chamber of Commerce MetLife poll of small business owners, just 40% believe their small businesses can operate indefinitely the way things are going right now. And a significant 62% of them are convinced that the worst is yet to come. Approximately 30 million small businesses in the U.S. today, ladies and gentlemen. So that means that even if a third of them were forced to close down permanently, we would lose 10 million small businesses. Think of the impact of that on those owners, at least 10 million, plus their employees. That same poll of small businesses also found that 74% of all small business owners need further government assistance to, quote, weather the pandemic. And when most of those small business owners say they're in desperate need of help, they're not kidding. According to the most recent Alignable survey, more than a third, 35% of all small business owners, couldn't pay their rent this month. That includes 61% of all restaurants. 61%. Beauty salons, 46%. Travel hospitality businesses, 43%. They round out the top three of most affected businesses, but many others are in trouble nevertheless. Folks, this isn't what a recession looks like. I mean, when more than a third of all small businesses in the entire nation can't even pay their rent, that's called being on the verge of an economic collapse. Look at federal tax receipts. Over the last 9 months, the drop in government tax receipts is the largest ever. In November, 9 months into the pandemic, federal income tax receipts were off by 13% from a year ago. That's the largest on record, drop on record. In fact, the only comparable period is a 14% drop in 2009 during the Great Recession. With each passing day, more Americans are falling out of the middle class and into poverty. Since June, nearly 8 million more Americans have fallen below the poverty line. And listen, these aren't trumped up figures. I mean, poverty this year in the U.S. is defined on living on $12,760 or less for one person, $17,240 for a couple, and $26,200 for a family of four. You try living on that income, and I think you'd find you're living a quarantine-style lifestyle all of the time. The poverty rate in the U.S. jumped to 11.7% in November, up an astounding 25% since June. And that's according to research done by folks at the University of Chicago and Notre Dame. Things are getting worse, and it's happening very rapidly. And everywhere you look, there are tragic stories. I mean, the other day I read that a 2-year-old boy had been abandoned at a Goodwill store. Good God. The bottom line is this: when people feel like they're out of options, they get very desperate, or can. And desperate people tend to do desperate things. Now, let's finish up today's program. Not sure I'll have time to get through all of this. With some insights from Pam and Russ Martins in their latest Wall Street on Parade newsletter. They point out in his news conference the other day, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said that the current economic downturn is the most severe of our lifetimes. But then he said that the Fed has given no thought at all to what kind of emergency lending it might engage in under the incoming Biden administration. Now, as we know, the Treasury Department has kneecapped the Fed's existing emergency loan programs by demanding that the Fed return the Treasury's unused money that's been guaranteeing the loans as a loss-absorbing source of capital. The Fed has 7 emergency loan programs operating today that are using Treasury money as backstops or guarantees, what they are. There's just 2 that aren't. Now, according to an audit released by the GAO in 2011, the Government Accountability Office, of the Fed's 6 emergency loan facilities that were operational during the Great Recession, just 1 had any funding support from the Treasury. According to that audit, the Fed dispersed a total of $16.1 trillion in cumulative loans through those programs. And all it ever got from Treasury was a $20 billion backstop for the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Program, known as TALF, which was eventually reduced to $4.3 billion in the middle of 2010. Now, the Treasury was involved in providing backstops along with the Fed for the bailouts of AIG, the giant insurer, the too-big-to-fail casino bank Citigroup. However, those were not broad-based emergency lending facilities. In any event, we're out of time. I'm sorry. I'll ask Melody if we can bring this back up again on Monday, because I think it's an important story that deserves your attention. For now, that's all the time we have for today's show. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Thanks to our engineer, Todd, for producing today's show and all of our programs. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good weekend, and please, please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.